Genesis chapter 34. As we've been working our way through the book of Genesis, we've found now that Jacob is now home, and he's back in Israel, and he's settled down in a place called Shechem, and he's settled down there for some time. And as we think about this, he's been in the land now for probably about 10 years. And the reason we know that is because his children have now grown. When they left Haran, Joseph and Dinah were his two youngest children, according to the chronologies and things that we have there. And that means they were about 6 years old when they left, because they were born just before he worked for 6 years for the cattle. So they were about 6 years old when he left. And by this time, we find that they are teenagers, and the older boys are young men. And so it's probably been somewhere around 9 or 10 years that they've been in the land of Canaan. We find in the opening verse of the chapter that it starts out very abruptly. And it starts out and says, "And Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land." All right, now that just kind of lays the foundation of what we're dealing with here. Dinah went out to visit the daughters of the land. Now, as we look at this section here, we're going to find that as she goes out to visit the girls of the land, in doing so, she met a young man named Shechem. And it's unusual that he's named the same as the city. So that's a bit confusing when you think of the city being called Shechem and the boy's name is Shechem. But that's the case it is. So when we talk about Shechem this morning, most of the time we're talking about the young man, not the town. And so she meets this young man named Shechem. And this morning we're going to see what happens when this teenage girl loses her virginity and her brothers lost their temper. And we're going to see how that affected them and the results of these things and the things that took place in this morning. And so as we begin, I want to start out by seeing right off that he starts talking about Dinah and how that she loses her virginity. And the loss of virginity is something that usually is a process. It isn't just a once-off, you know, real sudden thing like that. Now, as I start this morning, I want to make sure that we all understand the terminology, and I'm not going to get any more graphic than necessary, but we need to make sure we understand the terminology we're talking about. For years, when I was younger, I used to confuse the two words, virgin and virtue. Totally different words. Virtue is a good quality that all of us should have. It is a good quality. It's a quality of excellence. It's a moral quality many times. It's virtue. It's something that God wants everybody to have as virtue. Virgin, on the other hand, is one who has not yet had sexual relations with anyone. You know, it's like when you buy something at the store. Maybe you buy a box of cereal, and the cereal box is all sealed up. If you went to the store and found a box of cereal that was some kid had opened up and the inside wrapper was open and the kid had taken a handful of them out, you wouldn't buy that box. Why? Because you don't know what he might have put in there and what germs might have gone in there too. It was no longer sealed. It was opened. It was no longer new. It had been used. And with the word virgin there, sometimes we use the term to even describe like a forest. They'll talk about a virgin forest. It's a forest that's never been cut. No one's ever gone in there and cut it before. It's been that way since the time of the flood. It's been growing for years. A virgin forest. One that has not been used. And so it is when he's talking about a virgin and a human, he's talking about that gift that God gave every child when they're born. They're born with purity. They're born with a body that has never been involved in any kind of sexual activity. And so that is what virgin is. Now, the word pure is another word that we need to look at, and we're going to be talking about that because the word pure many times is used interchangeably with the word virginity. A person might say they've lost their purity or they lost their virginity or they're pure. And there is a sense in which the two are synonyms. But I believe that there is also a sense in which they're different. And here's why. Because often the word pure should include other activities just besides just the loss of their virginity. You know, there's a lot of things that lead up to that are not right and not pleasing to the Lord. For example, things that lead up to that, like holding hands, hugs, touches, kisses. You know, a lot of times people think, well, there's nothing wrong with any of that stuff. But any honest married person knows that that's all part of what God made for the purpose of marital unity. And it all leads up to that. And so all of those things, if we are involved in those kind of things, a young person may be involved in those kind of things and never technically lose their virginity, but they have lost a lot of their purity. And so I think we need to keep that in mind as we look at this. Now, as we go back to our text here, we find that verse number one again, and Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her. And his soul clave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. And he loved the damsel and spake kindly unto the damsel. And Shechem spake unto his father Hamor, saying, give me this damsel to wife. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were in the, with the cattle in the field, and Jacob held his peace until they were come. Now, as we begin here, we find, first of all, Dinah goes out to meet the girls in the world. Now, Jacob had failed to cultivate in his daughter a godly character. Now, when it says that she went out to visit the girls of the world, we don't know what all that involved. But she was not satisfied to stay at home and to be what she ought to be. She went out to see the people of the world. You know, anytime we get out and mix in the ungodly people of the world, and certainly the people of her day were ungodly. There was a lot of ungodly people in their day. They were idolaters. They were wicked. They were immoral. They were ungodly people. And she went out to mingle with them. If you make friends with those kind of people, their influence is going to have an impact on your life. And, you know, you may say, well, Pastor, we can't live in this world without, you know, bumping shoulders with people that are ungodly. That is true, but there's a difference between going out and making friends with them and rubbing shoulders with them at work or bumping into them at the shopping center. There's a big difference between the two. And she was obviously going out to find friends. She was going out there to find the friends of the world. And her father failed to cultivate in her the character that was godly that she needed. You know, God holds fathers responsible for rearing their boys and girls. It's our responsibility as dads. And, you know, moms have a responsibility, but the fathers are primarily responsible for the rearing of the children, and especially to train them in a godly manner. Godly character is not something that they catch in one lesson. You know, it'd be great if we could just take our children and let's say, all right, when they hit 12, we sit them down and said, all right, now I got to have a talk with you, and you're going to be godly from this point on. Bang. It'd be great if it happened that way, but it doesn't. Godly character is something that is instilled with them gradually from the time they're little all the way up through their life. It has to be a consistent adding to their character and adding to their character to build them up to the place where they can be a godly young person. And it's something that it takes time. You know, we need to answer their questions. We need to warn them of dangers. We need to set godly limits. We need to hold them accountable. Very important that we hold them accountable. You know, that this is no time for embarrassment. And as parents, it's hard. I remember when my boys were young teenagers and in that area where I had to start having some talks with them. And I felt embarrassed too. But that's not right. We shouldn't feel embarrassed because we're helping them. We're helping them to find out the things that they need to know to be able to face the issues of life. You know, if we don't inform them and help them and guide them and teach them and turn them down the right channel, somebody will, and it won't be in a godly way. You know, the devil is actively ready to speak to them if we don't. And we need to help them, teach them, train them, and guide them. And let's not be embarrassed in this. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4 says, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. We're to bring them up, rear them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. It speaks of discipline, it speaks of correction, it speaks of training, it speaks of example, it speaks of mentoring. It is all of these things, and he says we're to do it for the Lord, to help them to be able to follow the Lord. And so there is a great responsibility, and Jacob obviously did not do a very good job in Dinah's life in guiding her in that area. Now, Leah, her mom, also failed to help her to develop some values of her purity. Moms, you have a great opportunity to have a closer relationship, especially with your girls, in this area. And it's very important that you develop this and help them to understand the importance of their purity and the importance of their virginity. And help them to see the connection that often is the case, not always, but often is the loss of virginity is often connected with the lack of modesty. Many times it is. And that is something that is just a reality. If a young woman does not dress modestly, her chances of losing her purity and her virginity are greatly increased because she hasn't kept herself modest. And so mothers have a great responsibility here to help them. And men, you know, we need to be helping our ladies, even our wives. Sometimes they don't understand. That's one of the things that the ladies, as I've talked to my wife and other ladies, one of the things that ladies have the greatest struggle understanding is they cannot comprehend how a man thinks. And men can't comprehend how a woman thinks. We're different creatures. God made us different. And it is just a fact and a reality that men struggle with their thoughts. And that is why we find even in the Bible, Jesus knew that. Jesus addressed that issue in Matthew chapter 5, verse number 28. Jesus said, if a man looks on a woman to lust after, he hath committed adultery already with her in his heart. Now, Jesus knew that men struggle with that. But in the same time, you turn it around, a woman that dresses in a wrong way and causes a man to think wrong things, she's equally guilty. She's got guilt on herself as well because she has caused that. And so we need to make sure that we're teaching our children and helping them understand that when they wear clothes that are skimpy, and especially the girls, if they wear their short skirts or their low tops and bathing suits and things like that, it is causing men to think wrong thoughts. It really is. You know, you might say, oh, you know, Pastor, you're being too ridiculous. You know, you think about it. Sports Illustrated is a magazine that's in America, but probably a lot of you have heard of it. Sports Illustrated magazine, probably, and I'm not saying this based on statistics, just from what I've kind of heard, probably the most popular issue that they have each year is their swimsuit issue. Now, why would that be? If swimsuits are perfectly fine. The reason is because they're not perfectly fine. That's the bottom line. It is immodesty. It's a type of pornography. And it is not good. And so we need to be careful. And we need to teach our ladies what is right. And it's not an easy thing. And we feel embarrassed. And moms feel embarrassed. And dads feel embarrassed. And so nothing says. And then the kids do what they want to do. And then it leads them into trouble. And so Jacob and Leah had failed to help their daughter and guide her in the right way. Now Dinah also was wrong. She was wrong, first of all, for going out and spending all this time with the ungodly in the world. You know, ungodly girlfriends in Shechem are not a good influence. They were not a good influence on her. And they certainly pulled her the wrong direction. Now, if Jacob gave her permission, he was acting foolishly. We don't know. God doesn't tell us anything about it. All we know is that Dinah did it. She went out to visit the girls of the land. Now, if Jacob said, that's all right, Dinah, you can go visit the girls of the land, have a good time. He was not acting wisely. He was acting very foolishly. And if Leah gave her permission, she wasn't thinking very wisely either. However, if Dinah went without permission, then she was just being rebellious. If she went out sneaking away and didn't tell mom and dad where she was going and just kind of disappeared and spent time with the girls in the land, and then she was being rebellious. And the Bible does not say if she did this just once or whether it was an often thing. But I kind of think that from the context of things, I don't think it was just a one time. I don't think that one day, you know, she just kind of sneaked off and spent the whole day out there and ended up at the end of the day, she ended up falling into immorality. I don't think it was that way. It sounds to me like she was getting into this habit of going out and visiting the girls. She had girlfriends down in the town. And, Dad, I'm going down to town to see the girls. And or whether she told them or not, I don't know. And went off there and spent the day with the girlfriends in town. And the girlfriends in town were doing all kinds of things that are wicked and ungodly. And before long, she gets involved in a friendship with this boy, and then it all leads to trouble. But God doesn't tell us all the details. But you know, the friends you choose have a powerful influence on your life. Powerful influence. And peer pressure is unbelievably strong. Young people often do things among their peers that they would never, ever dream of doing by themselves. Just because they don't want to be weird. They don't want to feel like I'm not part of the group. Peer pressure is powerfully strong. And so we need to be very careful of the friends that we choose. It is far better not to have friends than to have friends that are ungodly. Far better not to have any friends than to have friends that are ungodly. You know, a lot of times we feel like, oh, woe is me. I don't have any friends. Well, that's part of being a Christian. You know, as I was growing up, I didn't have very many friends either. I had a few friends at church, but as far as at school and stuff, I didn't have very many friends. And I never had any that were really close friends, or very seldom did I ever have any close friends. And my boys grew up, they didn't have any close friends. That's tough, but it's just reality. If we're going to live for God, we're not going to have a lot of close friends. But you're better off not having any friends than to have friends that will lead you the wrong way. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20 says, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but he that is companion of fools shall be destroyed. We find also in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33, be not deceived, evil communications corrupt good manners. God says, don't be deceived. If you have evil communications or evil friendships, they're going to corrupt your good manners. It'll happen. You say, well, I'm strong, I'm tough, I'm a strong Christian, what happened to me? It's happened to stronger. And it will happen. God says it will. He says it happens. We need to be careful. You know, usually the loss of virginity begins in our thoughts of the heart. It starts in the thoughts. And I'm talking to guys and girls now. But Satan tempts us to think sin is not all that bad. And he tempts us to think that, oh, once won't hurt. Or I'll just try a little. And we're not just talking about sexual sins, but any kind of sins that are out there. The devil's out there to tell us it's not going to be that bad. And you know, your mom and dad are exaggerating it. And the old people just don't understand. And it's not really that bad. And besides, you're not going to get caught. It's okay. It'll be fine. It'll be okay. All of those are lies of the devil. The devil is a liar. Jesus said in John chapter 8, verse 44, that he is a liar and the father of it. Don't believe his lies. He is not looking after your well-being. He is out to hurt you. He's out to hurt you. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23 says, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Guard your heart. Protect your heart. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 7 says, for as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. As the way a person thinks, that is really what they are all about inside. You know, you might say, well, I'm a godly person, but I struggle with my thoughts. The bottom line is you're telling a lie. Because you can't be godly if you have ungodly thoughts. If our thoughts are ungodly, our character is ungodly. Because our character comes out of our thoughts. The Lord tells us, for out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, and so on. It comes from the heart. So if our heart's full of ungodliness, then we're ungodly. And it's a struggle. We've got to deal with these things. We've got to work at it. And it's not easy. It is a struggle all through life to keep our heart clean and godly and think right and do right. Mark chapter 7, verse 21 says, for from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders. We read also in Psalm 44, verse 21, shall not God search this out? For he knoweth the secrets of the heart. See, God knows our heart. He knows all the secrets of our heart. He knows everything about us. We can't hide anything from God. And so, don't believe the lie of the devil. Young people, you need to be on guard because the devil is out to destroy you and to rob you of your purity and rob you of your virginity and to destroy your life and wreck your life and give you heartache and grief and sorrow. He is not your friend. He's your enemy. So, Dinah here, she made friends with the people of the world. But we find also that Dinah and Shechem committed fornication. We saw there that in verse number 2 that he defiled her. And many commentators blame Shechem and say that Shechem forced her or it was a rape or something of that nature. But I'm not so convinced of that, and I'll share with you why in a moment. Whether Dinah willingly went along with it or resisted, her sexual intimacy with Shechem was sinful. It wasn't right. It wasn't right. It was wrong. And because the Bible says that Shechem loved Dinah, verse number 3, and he sought to marry her, verse number 4, and that later on, down in verse number 26, we find that she was living in his house, I am more persuaded that this was not a one-time event. It was not just something that happened that first day that she ran off to see what the girls in the town were doing, and that it was a forced situation. I believe that it was a gradual process, as so often happens, where she developed a close relationship with this young man, Shechem, and the relationship continued into the point where it got out of control. You know, if this is true, then Dinah made several major mistakes. She made several major mistakes. For example, first of all, she made close friends with ungodly people. That's a major mistake. A major mistake. Now, there's nothing wrong with being friendly to the ungodly. But to make close friends of the ungodly is very, very dangerous. Very dangerous. Secondly, peer pressure and ungodly girlfriends weakened her. Spending time with these ungodly girlfriends, they weakened her. They would probably sit around talking about things that Dinah would never talk about with mom and dad at home. They probably sat around saying things. And I mean, we hear that all the time in our wicked world. You walk behind a couple of teenagers walking on the street and they talk about all kinds of filthy stuff. And so it probably was the same way in their day. And it weakened her godliness and it weakened her stand for what was right. Then number three, she gave her heart to an unbelieving young man. If this was true, if it was a gradual thing, and I see a lot of evidence that it probably was, then she gave her heart to an unbelieving young man. She hid her lustful friendship from her parents. She didn't come to dad and say, "Dad, there's this really nice guy I saw down in town today. You know, I'm wondering if maybe I could spend some time with him." She didn't do that. You can be sure of that. She hid that from dad. She had a desire in her heart that wasn't right, and it led her the wrong direction. And then, number five, she let down her guard and spent time alone with her boyfriend, probably holding hands, touching and kissing, and it led to the ultimate result of losing her virginity. Young people, don't be deceived. These steps that I just mentioned, there's these five steps, always lead to the loss of pure heart and often lead to the loss of virginity. You cannot do these five things without losing some of your purity. You cannot have ungodly friends. They will rob you of some of your purity. I'm not talking about your virginity at the moment. I'm talking about your purity. They will rob you of some of your purity. And you cannot give your heart to an unbelieving person of the opposite gender without losing some of your purity. You cannot get involved in this lustful kind of a relationship without losing some of your purity. You cannot be involved in holding hands and touching and kissing and all the things that goes on in our world today without losing some of your purity. And often, losing your virginity. And that is not what God wants. God's warning us. And you know, as we think about these things, in addition to the loss of this, it also leads to guilt and heartache. And many adults will look back at their youth with regret. Whether they lost their virginity or just lost some of their purity, they look back at it with regret, wishing that they would have done things differently than they did. And you know, God doesn't want it to be that way. God doesn't want us to look back with regret. We need to be careful not to let Satan tell us that we're going to be an exception. That might be true with everybody else, but it won't happen to you. Satan is a rotten liar. Don't believe him. Don't believe him. He is lying. And we need to be careful. Galatians chapter 6 and verses 7 and 8 says, "Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, and he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting." God says you always reap what you sow. And so God is warning us and urging us to be wise. And so young people, please, I'm not preaching at you, I'm preaching for you. I want to help you. I want to encourage you. Guard your virginity. Guard your purity. Follow God. Walk with God. Stay close to God. Have an intimate fellowship with God. It's very important. Dress modestly and be godly. But then let's notice that Dinah's brothers, how they responded. We see here that they made a deal with Shechem. Look down in verse number 4. Shechem spake to his father and asked for permission to marry. So Shechem here, I mean, in a sense, he's kind of doing some things that are right, but he gets them out of order. I mean, he should have sought permission before he went ahead with intimacy. He should have gotten married first. You know, a lot of times people get things twisted around. They go get involved in immorality before they get involved in marriage. And someday, 5-6 years down the road, after they've lived together for a good long time, then they say, oh, why don't we get married? They've got things twisted around. God says marriage comes first before intimacy. And so he's asking his father to find her for his wife. And then he asks her father, down in verse number 11. It says, and Shechem said unto her father, that's Jacob, and unto her brethren, let me find grace in your eyes, and what ye shall say unto me, I will give. All right, so he says, I want to marry Dinah, and I'll pay whatever dowry you request. I want to marry Dinah. And like I said, that was the right thing to do, to ask for permission, but he got things out of order. He should have done things in the right order. And then if he would have, Jacob could have said, no way, hang on, no way. You know, you're not a godly person. You're not one of our people. You're not following God. You don't even believe in God. No way you're going to be, you know, marrying my daughter. Not a chance. And he could have stopped it, resolved the problem, resolved the immorality, resolved the guilt, all the problems that came along with that, if it would have been handled in the proper way. But Jacob's sons, they don't respond quite like dad. Look at verse number 14. And they said unto them, Shechem is asking for their permission to marry Dinah, and the boys get involved here. And these are her older brothers. They're 6 or 7 years older than her. And they say, we cannot do this thing to give our sister to one that is uncircumcised, for it will be a reproach unto us. But in this we will consent unto you, if ye will be as we be, and every male of you be circumcised, then we will give our daughter unto you, and we will take your daughters unto us, and we will dwell with you, and be with, and we will become one people. Now, the boys here were telling partly truth and partly not truth. All right. It was true that God had set them apart, and they were a separate people, and that they were to be circumcised among the Jewish people. That was truth to that. But to tell them that by them becoming circumcised, that somehow they would all be one people and they'd be all merged together was not true. Because circumcision was not just an outward sign, it was a symbol of something that was in the heart. It was supposed to be representing that they were part of God's people. Circumcision didn't make them saved, didn't give them faith, it didn't make them righteous. It was just an outward identification. So putting an outward identification on somebody doesn't change the fact. You know, for a lot of times what happens, and it's happened scores of times. I read a story not all that long ago of a young lady that she got this boyfriend that wasn't a Christian. Dad didn't stop it. She ends up saying, well, I want to marry this guy. But Dad says, oh, yeah, well, he's got to be a Christian. So he starts coming to church with her and plays it like he's a Christian. And all's well. And they get married. And they're taking off on their honeymoon. And he says to her, glad that's done. And she says, what do you mean? Ah, going to church. I'm sick of that. I don't want to do that anymore. And she says, what? No, I'm not going back to that church ever again. I'm just putting that on to get you to marry me. And how sad. You know, you see, and that's kind of what they're talking about here. It's just something on the outside. Just, you know, you tack on this and we'll marry and it'll be okay. But that doesn't change their hearts. It doesn't give them a heart for God. It doesn't make them believe in Jehovah. It doesn't cause anything to change deep down inside. They're just going through an outward motion. So that's not going to solve the problem. So the boys are being a bit deceitful, but they have a plan behind it that's even more wicked and vile than this. As we read on, we see down in verse number 17, but if ye will not hearken unto us to be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and be gone. And the words pleased Hamor, the son of Shechem, and Hamor's son. And the young men deferred not to do the thing, because he had delighted in Jacob's daughter and was more honorable than all of his house. So the men of Shechem, Shechem and his dad said, hey, that's all right. That's a good idea. We'll get circumcised and then we'll talk all our people into it. So they go back to the people. They tell all the people, listen, Jacob and these guys, look at all the stuff they've got. They're wealthy people. They got all these animals and they're obviously wealthy people. And if we just cooperate with them in this one little thing, then we can all become one people and they'll marry us and we'll marry them and all of their goods will eventually get to be ours. And so they're getting all this greedy thoughts in mind that we'll get everything here if we cooperate with them. And so they, to make a longer story a little shorter, the whole city agrees to do that. So all the men of the city agree and they all get circumcised. And then we find the evil that comes up in this situation. All right. Simeon and Levi become murderers. Verse number 25. And it came to pass on the third day when they were sore that the two sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took each man his sword and came into the city boldly and slew all the males. So these people that they had deceived and told them they all needed to get circumcised, so all the men get circumcised and they're sore after their operation and they can't move around, can't hardly move, and Simeon and Levi just grab their swords, walk in there and they kill them all, wipe them all out. What a terrible, wicked thing to do. They're saying, yeah, but that she, you know, they treated our sister like a harlot. That was terrible. They shouldn't have done that. Well, that might be true, but that doesn't justify murder. That doesn't justify going in there wiping out the whole city. That wasn't right either. They acted in their revenge, in their anger, and responded in a way that was very wrong. And so we need to be very careful about this as we think about these things. Now, back to this circumcision thing just for a moment. As I said, it wasn't that the circumcision that would change their heart. It was only an outward thing. And they were trying to get them to do something outwardly, but nothing inwardly. And you know, as we think about that today, you know, salvation is not just something we put on the outside. And so young people, it isn't enough to just find somebody that says, oh yeah, I'm a Christian. Yeah, well, what do you say? Well, back, you know, when I was 10, I don't know. Yeah, that's good enough. Yeah, I'm a Christian. But they don't act it, they don't live it, they just say it. That's not sufficient. You know, when you're looking for a spouse, first of all, you shouldn't start looking for a spouse until you're old enough to marry a spouse. But once you're old enough to marry a spouse, then you should be looking for someone who's going to be godly. You want someone that's going to be godly. Someone who's going to truly love God, walk with God, serve God, please God, want to have your children to be God-fearing and a happy home. Not someone that's just faking it. Romans chapter 10 and verse 10 says, for with the heart man believeth unto righteousness, and with the mouth confession is made unto salvation. See, it's something that takes place deep down inside. It isn't just something that's on the outside. Also, Ephesians chapter 3 verse 17 says that Christ may dwell in your hearts by faith, that ye, being rooted and grounded in love, and so on. He says here it takes place in the heart. There needs to be a heart difference. And so we need to find a person to marry that has a heart for God. Someone who truly loves God, truly wants to walk with God. You say, Pastor, I don't know anybody like that. I guess I'll have to be single the rest of my life. Well, listen, you're better off being single than brokenhearted. You're better off being single than marrying someone who's ungodly. And I mean, I can take you to a lot of people and tell you stories of people who thought that they were the exception. It'll be okay. If I marry them, I'm such a good convincer. I'll convince them to become a Christian and all will be well. It doesn't work that way. It leads to heartache and sadness and sorrow. You're better off being by yourself than marrying the wrong person, marrying an ungodly person. So these brothers, Simeon and Levi, they go in there and kill everybody, justify their terrible action because of the what had happened to their sister. And then verse 30, Jacob finds out about it. And obviously Jacob wasn't in favor. For Jacob says unto Simeon and Levi, ye have troubled me to make me stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And I being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me. And I shall be destroyed, and I and my house. And they said, why should he deal with our sisters with a harlot? Now, see, they're putting all the blame on Shechem. They're forgetting that sister had something to do with it, too. Unless it was a forced thing, and I realize that. But I think because of the contents here, I really don't think that we can put all the blame on Shechem. And so they justify their action because what had taken place, but Jacob sees the problem. He's saying, we're not very big in number. I mean, we have a few servants here, but if all these cities around hear what happened to Shechem, they all gather together, they'll come down here upon us, we're going to get wiped out. We are in big trouble. But as it turns out, God intervenes and God protects them from that kind of a danger. But you know, there's a principle we can learn here, and that is that anger is a terrible thing. Anger is a terrible thing. These brothers were angry. Their sister wasn't right. Shouldn't have been done. That's true. Shouldn't have been done. But they were angry. And they let their anger get out of control. And it causes people to do foolish things and wicked things that they wouldn't think of doing if they were thinking clearly. And these brothers, if they had it to do over again, probably wouldn't have done what they did. But they were angry. And they responded in anger. If someone does something bad to us, we must not respond in anger. We need to stay calm and seek the Lord's wisdom to know what we should do. It's not easy. I mean, anger is often our fleshly response. He hurt me. I'm going to get even. I'm going to get back if it's the last thing I do. Sometimes it is the last thing they do. It's not worth it. Forgiveness is far better. Say, but I couldn't forgive them for what they did. That was rotten what they did. That's not the point. God will deal with that. We can forgive. If God can forgive our sin, we can forgive their sin. We need to ask God to help us to forgive and not to respond in a wicked way. Angry revenge often results in agonizing regret. And we don't want that to happen. We need to avoid that. And so this morning, parents, we need to ask ourselves a question. Are we developing the purity in our children that we need to develop? If we don't answer their questions and teach them modesty, guide their choices of friends, and help them guard their virginity, they're going to do what everybody else is doing. And that's not good. It's going to lead them the wrong direction. We've got to be involved. Mom and Dad, it is your responsibility. And I've been through it. I know what you're talking about. It's embarrassing to sit down with the kids and say, we've got to have a one-on-one talk. Oh, Dad, we have to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that. It's important. It's important. We've got to deal with it. And not just on a one-on-one scary issue, but we need to talk to them regularly, not about always just about intimate type things, but the preparation, the modesty, the thoughts, the things that build up to this. Guard them, help them, guard what they see, guard what they're listening to, guard the places they go, help them to keep themselves pure, because out of the heart proceed the evil thoughts. It's out of the heart that are the issues of life. So we've got to protect their heart. Protect their heart. And Mom and Dad, you need to ask yourself, what am I specifically doing to protect the hearts of my children? What are you doing? Are you just hoping that it'll all be okay? Or do you have a plan? Are you implementing something to help protect the heart of your children? We've got to do it. It's our responsibility. And young people, you have a responsibility as well to guard your heart, guard your virginity, guard your purity. You need to do so by guarding your mind, guarding your friendships, guarding your modesty, guarding your conduct, guarding the things that you do. And it's something that each of us has to do. And as young people, you have a responsibility. Mom and Dad have a responsibility to teach you, but you ultimately have the responsibility to stand for what is right and do what is right. And there's pressure all around us. Everybody else is doing something different. Everybody else is doing wrong, and I've got to do right, and I feel so bad and so dumb and so narrow. It's fine. Do what God wants you to do. Don't worry about what everybody else does. They'll live with the heartache and sadness and brokenness. You don't need to follow their steps. Let's do what is right. And the way that you can do it, the very best thing you can do to help yourself, young people, is to have a flourishing relationship with God. By that, I mean you need to spend quality time every day reading the Bible, spending time learning from the Bible, writing things down that you learn from the Bible, and spending quality time with God in prayer. And if you don't do that and say, oh, that's too hard and that's boring, I don't want to do that, then you're setting yourself up for problems. Because you've got to have God's help. And God's not going to help you if you're not walking with God. So if we don't walk hand in hand with God, we don't have God's help, then we try to do right on our own, and we're going to fall flat on our face in the mud, and one day we're going to wake up and say, how did I get all mud? How did I lose my virginity? How did I lose my purity? I just don't understand. It's because I didn't take time to walk with God. It all starts there. You can't do it on your own. And as parents, we've got to have God's help. We can't do it on our own either. And even as adults, once we're married, we've got to guard ourselves and guard our thoughts and guard our activities. And we can't do it on our own. We need God. We've got to have God's help. We've got to walk with God. And so let's ask God to help us to have that kind of a close, intimate relationship with Him that we need.